Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies, the Talking Pictures podcast. I'm Neil Rosen, joined by Bill McCuddy.
That's me.
What do we do here, Bill?
We watch the bad movies so you don't have
That's true. Bill Bregoli, as always.
Actually, Christopher Plummer is taking my place for today's.
Oh, okay.
Boom. Bill McCuddy
with a bad back today. And returning, our friend from Beyond the Trailer on YouTube, Grace Randolph is here.
Hello, everybody.
There you go. Man, we got so
are much fun. Are you an R Red Band trailer today or a green regular trailer today? We want the Red Band, Grace.
Okay, I'll try and do the Red
Band.
Good.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, anyway, we've got so much to cover today. We've got Justice League. We've got Thor. And Grace is the comic book expert, so that's great.
We're actually going to hear from someone in Justice League
right.
as well.
We've got Roman J. Israel, Esquire, which is the Denzel Washington movie to talk about. We've got Mr. Roosevelt, an independent film written, directed, and starring Noel Wells. And we're going to review, because it was supposed to open this week, and we told you last week we were going to review it.
And we're very controversial.
And it was pulled, the Louis C.K. movie, for obvious reasons, and no pun intended there. We're going to do I Love You, Daddy. We're gonna review that. We're also going to talk
Wait,
about...
pulled was the pun? Ouch, really?
Yes,
Ew.
That was the pun.
Yeah, okay.
All right, I don't know. Was it a bad pun?
I don't know. Wow.
Okay. And we're going to talk about...
That's creepy enough without you,
The
John.
Girlfriend Experience. Experience, which is in
on
season
stars.
Two now on Stars, and we're going to talk about what did Bill see? Bill Bregoli, you saw something else?
Justice
that you
League.
Okay, well, we said we're going to talk All about right. that. Yeah, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, and The Crown is coming back, and there's a bunch of stuff on DVD like Atomic Blonde, and that's this. And before we begin. Listen to the sounds in New York City, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't know if you can hear it outside my window, but it's a view to a kill.
Picture window, a nice picture window. It's a good trade-off.
Right. We're actually sitting right across the street from Carnegie Hall. And how do you get to Carnegie Hall?
Practice.
Well, you make a left That's on 57th.
Practice,
you go
practice,
straight
practice.
Across 7th Avenue.
Line.
All
right. I say we start out talking about Justice League, since that opened. And then we can go into Thor from there. So, all right. So, Justice League. Why isn't Superman in the movie? Grace.
Well, I can't because there's a spoiler. He's
except that Henry Cavill's name's in the credits,
and he's
so
at the premiere.
Right away.
So,
well,
I think Superman fans more than anyone will be the most happily surprised by the film.
Did
a
you
little
like
goes a long way.
A lot goes a long way.
Okay.
Well, you know, DC is trying to do Marvel. You know, this is their attempt at doing the Avengers, although the Justice League comic book, you know, has been around. It probably precedes the Avengers. I mean, the Justice League is an old comic book, but, you know, is it funny? Is it just straight up action? Is it terrible like the Batman versus Superman movie?
Not as bad, isn't it?
Well, I liked Batman versus Superman.
So. What's that?
I liked Batman versus Superman.
Well, I'm one of the few Suicide Squad fans, by the way, because they keep saying Suicide Squad was a bomb, and I love that movie. I thought Margot Robbie was great.
She was very good.
Before we get
into
it, I'm just curious. What did you possibly like about Batman versus Superman, just out of curiosity?
I liked playing with the characters. I thought it was very interesting. I liked exploring their alter egos. You know, usually the focus is always on the capes, the cape part of the persona. And I liked looking at Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent, and Diana
we'll
Prince.
I hated
it
because I
Let's
hate
explore
you.
Neil's alter
you,
ego.
And then it's like, oh, I knew your mother. Okay, now I'm going to do everything in my power to save your life. It was just like too much of a complete turnaround. But let's go on to Justice League. Okay, so Bill Bregoli. Tell me the plot of Justice League.
What?
Or we could tell
there's
me
a plot?
Is
no.
Yeah,
that is a problem with the movie.
I heard it really doesn't. Every review I've read, said the plot is really incidental to the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like an afterthought.
Okay, is there a plot?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah,
he has to bring the band together. Actually, he has to create a band in order to beat Steppenwolf, the 60s band.
Who's he?
Batman.
Remember Born to Be Wild, Steppenwolf?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's not hot.
Okay,
it's this weird.
Remember the theater company in Chicago that Steve Martin is a part of? But it's not that one.
Yeah, it's this weird creature with horns.
Different Steppenwolf.
For some reason, he
very
thinks everybody
CGI.
Off.
It wasn't Steve
yeah,
Martin.
Really,
it was,
and it's just Karen Hines' voice. And actually, in the credits, they just give him. It says Karen Hines, and then voice. Steppenwolf.
Okay, so the plot.
It's not real.
There's no plot.
They have to beat Steppenwolf. That's it. That's the only plot.
That's the whole plot. That was the pitch. That's how they sold it.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that, you know, I think late in the game, Warner Brothers came down and said this has to be under 2 hours. And if you even just look at the trailers, there's tons of footage missing. It's been substantially reshot. It's just, it's like suicide.
You would know that because it's, you combed through the trailers.
That's right. I remember the shots. We cataloged them.
And by the way, this is a quick digression, but don't you notice that there are tons of movies these days that have scenes that in the trailer that aren't in the movies?
That's
Warner Brothers in particular.
Years.
Yeah, but not so much
not
as
like
recently.
Now.
And Judd Apatow said he likes to give jokes away in the trailer that he won't, that, that he can surprise you with in the movie. So he intentionally does that.
Well,
that,
well he could do that.
That's not going to be
well,
in the film.
Well, he does improv. So, like, you know how, like, a lot of comedies, like, they'll do, like, six punchlines.
Well,
so he has ones to choose from.
About the Judd movies is if you get the director's cut, there's, like, four, on every movie from, like, 40-Year-Old Virgin through Trainwreck, there's 45 to an hour worth of stuff that's not in the movie. It's funny people. There's a whole other movie in there.
Right.
It's great.
So who did we sit down with on Justin, trying desperately
well,
to get this?
Cavill.
The Orient Express back on the tracks.
I have a wonderful soundbite from Henry Cavill.
Oh, wonderful.
Who was asked if we need superheroes.
Yes, it's very important that we have superheroes to go show us the light and show us great examples and maybe idealistic examples. But there's nothing wrong with idealism because it's a great target to shoot for. We probably won't hit it, but we can get close.
If we need what?
Superheroes.
Oh, okay. What does he say?
He actually says, yes. I mean, that's
you
the first
mark
word.
This on your thing?
Yeah, good idea. He says, yes, and that's all he says. We need someone to aspire to.
And do we have anybody else from Justice League?
Yes, we have Gal Gadot.
It was same, but different, as they say. I went to the same studio, same stage, same costume, but different people, different director, different crew. I think that I was ready to share the stage with such wonderful, talented people.
Or as my friend Gilbert Godfrey calls her, Giggles Gazooks.
Giggles Gazooks.
What is Gail?
So she was in. So she was in this movie. Apparently, Brett Ratner wasn't attached to it.
That's right. Just his money.
He is attached to it. Yeah,
I know. Yeah, it's just.
But the
money,
press
though.
Screening, they booed his logo.
Booed off the Warner Brothers lot.
She says that he. She says she will not return. To
they've
the
talked
Wonder
to her.
Woman.
Yeah, well, the latest I've heard is they've actually had a little talk with her, and they said, "Look, it's just his money, and he's off the lot now, and you're safe."
Okay. So how is Gail Gadot
Gail's
in the
fine.
Movie?
She helps it a lot. She's
would she be the star? Do all four of the characters in Justice League have equal, like in the Avengers movies, they try to give everybody equal screen time. Would you say all four of the Justice League characters, Batman, Wonder Woman, who are the other two we've got here?
Cyborg, Aquaman, and Flash.
Okay, five of them.
Yeah, so actually, of the new ones, Flash has the most screen time and the best lines.
Oh, actually, I disagree.
And likes,
I thought he was a little
and
grating.
Likes fast food or likes junk
grating?
Food?
Yeah. Grating, yeah. I thought
well, he's grating, but he had the best lines.
Which one loves junk food?
It's a Flash.
Flash.
Okay.
Because he has to consume a lot of calories.
Flash's father is Billy Crudup.
If you look at it, Grace, would you say that Wonder Woman gets the...
Actually, I had a major problem with Wonder Woman and how she was portrayed, and I think a lot of people do, and I think it's going to become...
In this movie or
yeah,
generally
I think,
speaking?
No, in this movie, and I think...
you like the original
yes,
movie.
Yes, quite
Wonder
a bit.
Woman.
And I think that it's going to become a problem for the movie, as, you know, you've seen a little bit about how the Amazon costumes have changed. You know, that's already come up.
Right. I know
but
that's
I think,
a big controversy.
There's a lot of humor that they put in there that I've been told is from Joss Whedon. And, like, for instance, there, it's just a lot of sophomoric humor that you wouldn't expect.
Well, there is a line, men ruin everything.
So the movie Wonder Woman was more sophisticated? She was a more sophisticated character than she is here?
No, I think they were more respectful to her. And she was more like an equal, you
uh-huh.
know? And, like, here, well, the
so
example,
she's the chick that's
well,
the butt of jokes in
well,
some cases?
Well, the example I've been using is they have the Flash land face first in her cleavage. You know, as
what?
The Flash land face
oh,
first in her cleavage.
Aquaman sits on the lasso of truth and tells her how hot she is.
Yeah, and that they should get together.
So get to the bad parts. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I think that everybody wants to see Wonder. The whole point is that Wonder Woman should be seen, you know, as like an equal member. And,
right.
You know, these are like, it's like an older approach to the to female characters. And
is
you know,
Ben Affleck Wooden in this thing?
Yes.
As usual?
He's a stiff.
I heard he's actually having fun in this one. That's what I heard.
I enjoyed
seriously.
It.
Seriously.
I thought he was good.
He
I thought the
good.
Way that
better
Batman,
than better than his performance.
I like Batman v Superman better for his performance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, because he's usually very dark.
Actually, Jeremy Irons is very good in it.
I really like Cyborg,
so
too.
Thor has made like close to $700 million worldwide.
It deserves every penny.
Will this make more?
No.
No.
Now, Thor, tell me about
Thor's
that.
Thor's funnier.
Now, tell me about Thor. Now,
this
Thor is
yeah.
What I'm hearing is Thor is being played for laughs for the most part. It's like it's very comedic.
Thor is amazing. Thor is an absolutely hilarious movie.
Now, you and I spoke about the new Spider-Man reboot, okay? And that was funny. Is this funnier than the Spider-Man movie, the Thor movie?
Yes. It's just absolutely hilarious. I think it's a fabulous film. It's really clever.
It's straight out comedies.
Yeah, and it's really,
like Guardians of the Galaxy is basically.
Would you say that? Yes, it's very much in that vein.
We talked about that last week, Neil. And of course, you didn't hear me. Yeah. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, I said.
Okay.
So it's
so
it's
the
in
emphasis
that.
Is would you say split 50-50 action comedy, or would you say there's even like
no,
more?
No, 70-30.
70-30 comedy.
Comedy.
Wow.
Comedy's favor.
All right, calm down.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That just the opening scene where he's hanging upside down.
Oh, that was fabulous. Chris Hemsworth is a comedian.
Yeah.
You know,
really good with humor.
That was our friend who does who used to do the TV show, Chris Najwani, wrote in Entertainment Weekly that from his appearances on sketch comedy TV, he's a comedian waiting to burst out of his.
It's like James Franco. It took forever to realize that James Franco is a comedian.
So
So
what
in a lot of his serious roles?
Yeah.
Why do you think that the people at Marvel decided to go the comedic route with this? Because if you look at the first Thor. I thought it got very the first half with Anthony Hopkins and Loki, not funny. But once the fish out of water, once
that was
comes,
great, that was
right,
great
once
stuff.
Once he comes to here, you got this guy from another planet, from another era, and he's trying to fit into modern day. Sorry, I thought that was very funny. Second one, when you saw Thor and other Avengers,
well that
not so
well Thor: The Dark World. I remember apologizing to my friends. For taking them. I was
funny.
Oh, it's going to be great. You guys, you got to go to the big comic book movies. And then I was like, I'm so sorry.
So the answer to Neil's question is,
I think they had nowhere left
because nobody ever answers his questions, is that basically, because they're so convoluted, is that comedy was kind of the only way for them to go.
Was it?
I think that the franchise was not working out. And I think that, Chris Hemsworth has spoken to the fact that he was so frustrated that he was basically playing this long-haired Shakespearean character. I mean, the haircut was his idea. He was like, I just want to get out of this, and I just want to have fun with the character.
Is this his last contractual obligation to do the character anymore? Is he done? Was it?
Well, he'll be in Avengers Infinity War.
Are you kidding? With the success of this?
I think this is so successful. I think they should start from here, quite frankly, in terms of his trilogy.
$700 million, you said.
Yeah, worldwide.
Yeah, and
it's only 2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks domestically, 3 weeks worldwide.
It'll be a $1 billion movie.
Well, Justice League could slow it down. I don't know if it'll make it to $1 billion. I hope so. It should.
Justice League will drop off a lot after the first week.
I don't think it's going to open that big.
Yeah. It may not open that way.
Okay, so Justice.
Because there's so much competition.
Well, here's the thing. Justice, interesting. People talk about this. They're like, because some people get upset because one of the criticisms about Justice League is it's funny. And people are, a lot of DC fans are like, well, that shouldn't, humor doesn't belong in DC. And so then DC fans who want, some DC fans who are very protective of the movies go, well, nobody got upset about Thor being funny. And the thing is that who is a Thor fan? You can play with that character and everybody's like, oh, that's great. I love it.
Don't mess with my Batman and my Aquaman and my Flash and my,
I think that's a big factor. People are like, that's not my version of the character.
Right. No,
they just take
it
more seriously.
Nobody cares about Thor in terms of what you're doing with it, but
go have fun with it.
Screwing around with Batman. Yeah. It's like, please, Interesting. All right. So on a scale of 1 to 4, I used to rate things with apples, but let's not do apples. On a scale of 1 to 4, how many stars would you give Justice League, Grace, and Bill, and how many stars would you give Thor?
Out of 4?
Out of 4.
Okay. I'll go first.
Go ahead.
I'll do it.
Go ahead.
Justice League, 2. Two out of 4.
2 out of 4.
And Thor Ragnarok, 3.5.
Bill?
I agree with her 100%.
Same exact rating.
Yep.
Okay.
I've seen neither one. I would go 2.5 on Justice League and 3.5
feeling.
On Thor.
Yeah.
Right. Just on a gut thing.
I'm going to go out and see Thor now on the basis of... because
you'll
I like my superhero movies laced with comedy.
One of the reasons...
Did you see Hunt for the Wilder People?
No.
Oh, well, because... What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah, I love What We Do
That's
in the
That's the same director.
That was on my top 10 list.
Right, oh, yes, we talked about this last week.
You're going to love it.
Clement.
Yeah, and Taika Waititi.
Neil needs notes from our past.
The guy who was his
podcast.
Friend with the shorter hair?
Yeah.
That's the director.
Well, What We Do in the Shadows, which I've brought up many times, is, yes, the bickering vampires in the house. It was your turn to do the laundry this week. It's on the wheel. No, I did go. I'm on garbage to tell you. Whoever came up with that idea to have, bickering vampires in a house doing chores.
You are going to love this. Also.
Great.
One of the reasons.
The rock monster is Taika Waititi, also, just so you know.
Yeah, that was him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the laid back kind of.
He was okay. Fantastic.
Aussie voice. All right.
So we talked about Ratner. We talked about the fact that Justice League may not open as strong this week. And one of the reasons it might not is because one of the huge blockbusters that was coming was Louis C.K.'s new movie. Let's do that next because we talked about Brett Ratner being
being
the reason that the next
Bill
one.
Bill McCuddy and I, I saw it before the scandal broke. I saw it about a month and a half ago. I saw the I Love You Daddy movie with Louis C.K.
We're talking about Louis C.K.
It after the scandal broke, and you have not seen it, Grace, correct?
Mm, no.
Grace, are you a broadcaster?
I wanted to watch it, but I had to take pain medication last night, and I fell asleep.
Bill Bregoli made it through about a half an hour of it, but that was not I don't think that's a slight on the movie.
I think
he's got a bad back. So here's the thing. Let me talk to you about the movie, since I saw the movie before there was any scandal stuff out on Louis. So the movie actually in some ways parallels what Louis C.K. has admitted to doing in sexual harassment. But I saw this movie before any of this came out, so I was able to just objectively look at the movie without any kind of baggage on it, like the way you saw it through different eyes, Bill. And I saw it with my wife, and she hated the movie. She just thought it was terrible. And she was a Louis fan. We both liked the Louis television show. And, I think it was better than Horace and Pete.
Why did she hate it? Was she offended, or she thought it was bad?
Mrs. McCuddy hated it, too, and
she
watched it after this all broke.
Oh, yeah? Boring. She hated Chloe Grace Moretz. Let me tell you what the movie is about, since nobody's going to be able to see this movie. First of all, it's shot in black and white, and Louis, again, and I'm going to tell you about these things before this scandal hit. I saw this movie, and I'm saying he's doing Woody Allen's Manhattan.
And didn't he pay for it himself? It's self-financed.
Oh, I got this. We all got.
I'll tell you about that in a minute.
This Louis C.K. letter that I'm on this mailing list, like when he released Horace and Pete, this television show, and, it's just where he's performing stand-up. So apparently he sunk $4 million into Horace and Pete, this show that, television, this 10-episode TV series, which he put on his website, and he was charging people like $2.99 or $4.99 an episode. And he said all the actors worked for free on it. Edie Falco, who's in I Love You Daddy, and Steve Buscemi, and all these people work, and Alan Alda. And apparently he got all the money back because he sold it to Hulu, and he made a lot of money. And he took all that money and put it into I Love You Daddy.
Oh, okay.
And he goes, okay, and now I'm going to try to make all that money back, but now the movie's not going to be released. Here's what the movie's about. Louis C.K. plays this television producer, successful television producer, who spread himself too thin. He's been so successful that they keep offering him to do other shows, but he hasn't even developed the shows fully yet. He goes, yes, great. We'll do a 10-episode commitment or a 20-episode commitment. And he doesn't really, these projects that he's undertaking, they're not fully thought out yet. And he's kind of bit off more than he could chew. At the same time, he has a daughter, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, who, without getting into too much detail, let's just say that she's very spoiled. He's divorced. He gives her everything that she wants. His ex-wife is Helen Hunt, right?
Right.
And she's comes to live with Louis.
She's 17, walks around the house in a bikini.
And she starts dating John Malkovich, who's like, what is he, 70? At this particular point, right.
I heard he's the Woody Allen stand-in, right?
Well, there's a couple people who could be Woody in this movie, unfortunately.
Louis' character idolizes John Malkovich because he's a very prolific, famous writer. But then, of course, he starts hating his guts when they start dating his daughter. And somebody once said when this thing came out, which I think is a great line, Bill McCuddy and I were talking about it, before Louis admitted to his sexual harassment crimes, they said Exhibit A should be this movie because,
there are some cringeworthy quotes in it that you can pull out of this whole thing.
Charlie Day is like his buddy who hangs out in his office. And there's this simulated masturbation scene.
Yeah,
he does that a bunch.
Charlie Day does that a bunch.
Which is pointless. And again, I see this movie before any of this comes out, and my wife is going like, what's the point? I go, what is the point of this? It's just kind of like...
Well, I think guys together do shit like that.
Do shit like that.
Well, when somebody like Grace isn't here for the podcast, we're always doing that. But
funny.
No, I think
who does that? I mean, really?
Supposedly it's part of Louis C.K.'s act.
Yeah, he does
apparently
all
that's
about
been
that.
His act for a long time talking about
in
that.
In fact,
so.
This whole movie is out of his id. You can tell there are all these things that have been
He has a very devoted fan base because of
he
it.
He does.
I remember when
we're
going to
find out how devoted.
When the story broke, someone said, how about some tears for all your boyfriend who's going to be so upset about Louis C.K.? You know,
right.
like, he. I mean, the support for him is incredibly
strong.
I
like the movie. I don't hate the movie, okay, for the record. My wife hated the movie.
I like the movie. My wife hated the movie.
And Bill McCuddy liked. You told me you liked the movie.
That's what I just said. I said I liked the movie.
And your wife hated
You should listen to the podcast after
I
the
should.
Podcast. You'd
no,
get so
you,
much from it.
You said your wife hated the podcast, hated the movie. But
she hates the podcast also.
Yeah, well.
Mostly because you don't listen to anything.
Well.
I liked the movie. It's not
enough.
A great movie,
no.
but it's good. It's a fun kind of homage, I would call it, to a Woody yeah. Allen movie. It's even got the Gershwin-y kind of sound, you know, soundtrack, and it's very well directed and edited, of which he, well, you know, is 100% responsible. But as I said a moment ago, there are some cringeworthy quotes from this thing, including at one point,
in retrospect,
yeah, he actually apologizes to all women for his behavior. He almost looks to the camera and says, "I'd like to apologize." He's talking as we've indicated about masturbation, about infidelity, about being around young women. There's almost a Donald Ivanka Trump relationship between. She's always sitting on her dad's lap and saying, "I love you," to get whatever she wants, which is obviously how Ivanka got all the posts she's getting mm-hmm. through the White House. So it's just really, really difficult to watch in light of what
right.
we now know.
So it's interesting because, like, again, you saw it through a completely different set of eyes because you saw it after.
And we got it by accident. I want to tell this story in just 30 seconds. Like, Orchard, distributing it, sent their package of movies out to the Broadcast Film Critics Association, of which the three of us are members, and it was a day later they decided to pull it. We would not have gotten that movie if they had decided to send the package out a day later.
Right,
so right now it's the hottest movie in Hollywood. I've had six people call me and say, "Can you please share that DVD with me?" So, and
don't
I mean some fairly influential people in the media world here.
Well,
in
the
New
movie's going to get out. Somebody's going to bootleg the movie. You
absolutely,
know what I mean?
If not already.
But I find it interesting the dichotomy of the fact that I saw it with no, like Bill's looking at the, Bill McCuddy's looking at the movie after the scandal, and he's going, oh my God, look at that line. And I'm looking at it before the scandal, so none of that is.
Well, you're looking at it even almost before any of the scandals.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm looking and it was
before,
at Toronto.
It was Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
I was looking at this as another Louis C.K. project.
It had done some film festivals before. I mean, it had some buzz, not great. It was highly buzzed about going into Toronto, and then sort of had medium buzz coming out of it.
Well, you know, I agree with you. I think it's a good movie, not a great movie. I have problems with the movie.
Should it be released?
Well, let me answer that in a second.
Let's talk about the art versus
the
artist.
The end credits
That's an interesting question.
The end credits are ridiculous. They echo a 1940s kind of ending. It's very bizarre. Everybody stands up.
Who gives a shit about that?
No, they're very... And I think the movie's too long. I think that they kind of make the point at a certain point in the movie, maybe 40, 45 minutes in. I think you could have cut it down a little bit. It just kind of belabors a lot of the same stuff over and over again. But that said,
John Malkovich is amazing.
Yeah, John Malkovich is great. Pamela Adlon, who's in a lot of, you know, she's yelling and screaming at him like she usually does.
She's the Susie Essman of the series.
Right. So she's good. And who else is in it? Let me think. Who else is in the movie? I think Chloe Grace Moretz is really good in the movie.
Yeah, I do too.
But talk about...
And Edie Falco is great, as you said.
There is a cringeworthy scene with Louis and one of Chloe Grace Moretz's friends.
Yeah.
But again, you know... all right. Yeah, I think it's a decent movie. Should the movie be released? Your question. I think that it's moot because I think eventually it's going to get out regardless of what, you know.
But this week, how much more popular would it have been this week? I mean, if you're the studio.
If this movie came out this week, it would
just out of curiosity, people would go and see it. I can't believe they're not. And by the way, do they have the right to go and get their $5 million back that they paid Louis?
Well, I think they should have a clause going forward in these contracts that there should be like a scandal clause. If you knowingly
Scandal clause, but there is something called a morality clause that's in almost every artist's agreement with anybody, going back to Fatty Arbuckle. And I'm telling you, I think this studio has a right to go and claim its money back from him. But I think it's the wrong move. I think Orchard should be distributing the movie.
Okay, but if you're taking Kevin Spacey
social media is gonna
out
kill
of a
them.
Movie
yeah.
and replacing him with Christopher Plummer, just because we cannot, in good conscience, put, you know, Kevin Spacey in a movie.
Now, wait a minute. Now we're getting into a different argument. So it's
they're not going to.
It's rape and groping that's no, but masturbating in front of somebody is the same
thing.
I'm
saying the way the current climate is, there's no way Orchard is going to be releasing the movie. They have other movies. They have other. They're just chalking this off to a loss, and they're.
If it's going to be more successful with the controversy, don't they owe it to? I'm not even sure they have stockholders, but don't they have a fiduciary responsibility? To make the most money out of it that they can.
But I think the issue is it's a short-term gain for a long-term loss.
Right, exactly. They're saying we don't condone this behavior. We're not releasing the movie. We have other movies. $4 or $5 million is really nothing to a movie studio.
What they're also saying is Louis did the same thing Kevin Spacey did. Do you agree with that?
No.
No, I don't think they're saying that at all.
Well, they're having this. It's the same punishment. Kevin got pulled out of a movie. Louis' movie is not being distributed.
Maybe Louis' movie does get released eventually.
Well, here's the thing. They could give Louis.
They're not saying they're never releasing the movie. Well, they're saying they were pulling the movie for now.
Well, here's the thing. They could give the movie back to Louis, okay, and get like an exchange. Like, you give us our money back. Here's your movie. Do with it what you will. I don't even think that Louis C.K. would release it. I think Louis C.K. is going to disappear. I thought his apology was well handled.
He said, I make my living talking. I'm now going to take a long time off.
But also, he admitted to doing the things. I think that's really important.
That's the point.
He didn't try and, I think that he explained himself as well as he possibly could.
So right, if you're him and you do some like appearance next, do you deal with it? Do you do a Pee Wee Herman? Do you do like come out and go,
I think he's gonna have to
who
do
wants
time.
To see my penis?
He's gonna have to,
the opening
basically
joke?
It's going to be a Mel Gibson. I think he's going to, it could be, I don't know how long it'll be, but he's going to take a long
Kevin
break.
Kevin Spacey. Can he come back? Or
no, because he's a predator.
Done forever.
Yeah.
Okay, Louis C.K., done forever?
No.
Okay, Harvey Weinstein, completely done forever.
Yeah.
Dustin Hoffman was in an award ceremony over the weekend, the pre-Academy Awards.
I don't think his behavior was wrong,
okay.
Quite frankly.
So all these things you're saying, Grace, should be judged on an individual basis, and some people can come back from this and some people can't.
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy had a really good idea. And she said there should be like an independent counsel for this stuff to be privately dealt with. I think doing it in the trades.
Yeah, they had that in Salem. I mean, where does this end? Everybody in Hollywood's come on to somebody.
I mean, having it affect someone's career is where it becomes problematic. Okay, like the agent, the manager
is
for
Brett Ratner coming back.
No,
he's done.
He's behind the scenes.
He'll be behind the scenes. He'll put his money up to something and maybe even come up with a nom de money where it's his money, but he doesn't get any credit.
Unless he changes the name of the company.
Yeah, he could do that.
Yeah, he could.
He could do that and hide behind the front or something like that.
Okay.
He'll work
somehow. Is Roy Moore going to get elected in Alabama?
Well, it's Alabama.
I think the thing about making the Salem comparison, though, about the council is that the council. Well, yeah, but I think that makes the council in a negative light. The point of the council is, I think, to protect guys. I think there's a little bit of a witch hunt thing going on a little bit now. Like, I think Dustin Hoffman shouldn't have been thrown into this situation. Okay, and I think these are complex situations. But I think that there needs to be a place that someone can go with their grievances. And I think that. Money motivates Hollywood, and before they were monetarily motivated to look the other way, and now they're monetarily motivated not to look the other way. And
all right,
I think
moving on, because we got a lot of territory to go through. We're going to move on now to Roman J. Israel, Esquire, the Denzel Washington movie. Bill, why don't you, as I used to say on the TV show, why don't you take the lead on this one?
This is a Los Angeles attorney who works behind the scenes in a firm until his partner dies, goes into a coma, and he has to take up the slack in the practice. He's decidedly from the 60s when you held your fist up in the air and said black power and equal rights. And he's still got kind of a fro. And he's got some tics. And he's got those things that Oscar-baiting actors like to have.
The way he's an Oscar disease. Like, they make a point of showing how he eats sandwiches. And he's eating it really weird. Like,
yeah, he lives alone. He listens to vinyl. He eats peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Into this dynamic comes Colin Farrell, who's a slick lawyer who runs a big downtown firm and offers him a job. He turns it down at first, and then eventually he needs it. This movie is a great vehicle for Denzel, but it's a flawed vehicle in that as a great lawyer, you want to see this guy in the courtroom reluctantly, since he's not a guy who practices. But the few times we see him in the courtroom, he's great. But it keeps presenting all these situations for him to get involved in that don't go anywhere. He starts to join a group. A civil rights group, meets a woman there that becomes a love interest. But the movie kind of meanders. It wanders around. It doesn't have a central core except for Denzel, which is what made it appealing to him to be in. And I can't recommend it beyond his performance. It's great, but it's not worth it.
What you're missing here is his civil... He's such a civil rights activist. He's wearing suits that are like 30 years out of style with wide lapels.
Like from Soul Train.
You know, he doesn't care about his hair, anything about his appearance. He's a champion of the downtrodden, of the people. And somewhere along the way, which I won't be...
Well, I wasn't going to give that away.
No,
I know where you're going.
No, I'm not going to...
He gets a taste of the better things in life. We could just say that.
Something happens to his outlook, okay? Uh-huh. And let's just
leave
it
at that.
Well,
that's in the trailer. It's in the trailer.
I'm just saying that I don't think it's fully explained enough why that change. I think it could have been more fleshed out more why that change happens. And I also think this is kind of like trying to be a Sidney Lumet film, but it's just not quite there. It doesn't quite
do it. Dan Gilroy, right?
Well,
Dan Gilroy,
the writer. Everybody's really excited about this because it's his follow-up to Nightcrawler. How does it compare to that?
It's lousy compared to that.
Oh, that sucks.
I think Denzel... What, give me your opinion, Bill.
Yeah, too much of it was unbelievable. I mean, the most obvious thing is the very pretty girl who takes an interest in him. I'm like, oh, come on. The girl and the nerd, I've seen this a million times before, and it doesn't make any sense. And remember at one point when that big thing happened.
The shift. Let's just call it the shift.
The shift happens. You were sitting next to me, and you said, oh, wow, something's happened.
And I said, I turned to Bill Bregoli, and I said, now this is getting interesting. And
so as you've always suspected, Neil's that annoying guy that talks during the movies.
I don't talk that much. But I said, now this is going to get interesting.
And I said,
but it didn't,
finally.
Did it?
Right. Bill said, finally. And then it did get interesting, but they didn't really, as Bill McCuddy said to me, there's no really there. I thought that was a really great comedy.
You know what it just dawns on me? The whole movie is like a B story with no A story. All of the things that happen in it now are like subplots, and there's no big narrative pull through the whole thing.
I say that Denzel, and I've said this a million times on the TV show, on the podcast, I could see this guy read the phone book and be captured. Denzel, I think he's one of the greatest actors like ever. I love Denzel, and he's captivating enough to make me I could recommend the movie solely on Denzel's performance, just to see a great performance. Colin Farrell, everybody is superfluous.
Farrell has a turn in the movie at the end that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, that's not explained either. But everybody's minor. Denzel is the centerpiece of the film.
Like a B plot.
I don't know if I would spend, as I used to say, full price at the box office. This is the kind of thing where if it comes on, you know, on Netflix, on demand,
you're on an airplane.
You know.
Where you can't walk out.
You know, I mean, for $5 or something like that, sure. To go on a date movie, you know, I don't know, what is it, $32 or something like that, you know. No, but... certainly when it comes on HBO, you know, Amazon Prime, Hulu, YouTube, whatever the hell it is, definitely watch it.
Do you think Denzel will get a nomination again?
I think he's got a shot. I mean, you know, the movie...
I don't think it's that competitive with guys this year. I think it's a big...
The problem with...
That is the deciding factor, I think.
What would hold Denzel back from getting an Oscar nomination is, and it's sad because this is the way it's looked at, is I don't think the movie's going to do that well, and I don't think the movie is, as Bill McCuddy said, I don't think the movie, and Bill Bregoli said, the movie's not that great. So I think that will... actually hurt his chances. You know, although the performance cannot be dismissed because it's a great performance.
He could get a nomination in the Golden Globes because they have more categories.
Yeah, they love when he shows up.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is there's no Oscar speech in the movie. There's no Oscar moment. You know that from just seeing the trailer. He's got a thing where he gets in a little shouting match with a young woman about civil rights versus manners. That's sort of kind of interesting. But there's no, oh, my God, moment for him in this movie, which is too bad.
Well, it's what it is. And, as I said, Denzel is great. I mean, he's Rain Man in this to some extent also. I mean, he's got like a lot of like.
I don't think he has Asperger's. I think he just has some.
Quirks
and fits, and he's eccentric.
And there's another scene that doesn't make sense in this movie, too, where he goes to speak to a bunch of, I wouldn't call them college kids.
Well, that's the civil rights activist group I was just talking about, where he gets in a conversation with a girl
But it doesn't really make, that whole scene doesn't really gel. Do you think that's...
Well, it's there because he has a romantic interest that comes out of that with the woman. The whole movie feels like it's made...
What happens in that scene and the reaction to the people in that audience, it doesn't really make sense why they're having that.
There's a lot of things that don't make sense. He says he's...
The adverse reaction to that crowd in that scene, it doesn't really... Why are they...
It was a little moment. Okay. Goes
he says he'll never go work for Colin Farrell, and two scenes later, he's working for Colin Farrell.
Okay, so next, Mr. Roosevelt. I love Noelle Wells.
Tell people who she is.
She was the first season of Master of None, the Aziz Ansari show. She was the entire... she's in every episode. That entire arc of the entire first season, meets her in a convenience store, they have sex... And they move in together, and is she
like Slurpee style? They have sex in the convenience store.
They go back to one of the whose apartment they go back to, but not a funny joke. But anyway,
See the show. I don't know if it's funny at all.
Okay. Anyway, she's really great in that, and I was very interested to see this because she wrote it, she directed it, and she stars in it. It's pleasant. It's okay. It's nice. I think it's a vehicle for her to display. Her talents at the beginning of the movie, she's auditioning and she's doing a Kristen Wiig imitation, and she's doing who else does she do?
She has all these characters she does, which is very funny. She has 60 seconds to do it, and she does Holly Hunter at a yard sale.
She's doing all sorts
of SNL audition, basically.
SNL audition.
Noelle Wells was actually on SNL for maybe 5 or 6 episodes, and she got kind of dismissed from the show, but they didn't really recognize her talents. So I think that scene is just there, not so much plot-driven, but to also display, you know, what Noelle Wells is capable of doing. It's okay.
It's a calling card. That's what it is. It's a small movie that she did to... wrote and directed herself.
Tell the plot of the movie, Bill Burgoyne.
I don't know if we can, because there's a cat in the
Yeah, we have a cat in the room.
Mr. Roosevelt is a cat.
Is a cat. It dies. It was the cat of her character and her boyfriend. She had left her boyfriend to pursue show business career in Los Angeles, which is going, but she decides to go back.
She leaves Austin, Texas, and goes back to Austin, Texas.
Right, she goes back to Austin, Texas.
For the funeral of the cat.
For the funeral.
For the memorial of the cat.
Right, for the cat's memorial. Meanwhile, the boyfriend has moved on and has a new girlfriend who's...
Much hotter.
Much hotter. Is an entrepreneur, and
way more interesting.
Yeah, and actually, there are some other characters in it as well. One of them, the woman who played the waitress, I really liked. I thought the two of them should have ended up together at the end of the movie.
Benson is in this too, who's a comic who has a very popular podcast and thing that every celebrity's been on called Getting Doug with High, where they sit around and get high with Doug Benson. He's also a film guy. I think he listens to this, so hello, Doug.
Yeah. It was a sweet little thing, but that's it.
She's upset when she goes back to Austin because her ex-boyfriend is involved with another woman, which she really has no right to be upset about because she's the one who left, but nonetheless, it bothers her, and she's kind of...
Scenes.
She's upset about the new girlfriend is upset about the cat. It's her cat. The boyfriend is not paying the attention to it. But, you know,
Do you recommend the movie?
Again, I would not go out and spend money on this, but if...
Well, I don't think it's in theaters, so you don't have to.
If it's on demand, I would check it. I would check it out on demand. I'd say sure, just barely. I'd give it a
pass. I think she's a talent. I'm not sure about writing and directing movies for her, but she'll definitely get some work from this.
Would you recommend it, Bill Bergoli?
If it shows up on Netflix and you're already spending money, your Netflix money goes pretty far.
And if you're a huge Aziz fan and loved that show and loved her on it, you probably need to see it.
It's sweet.
What's new on demand this week, speaking of streaming?
Well, we've got Atomic Blonde, and we got an Atomic Blonde sitting next to us, Grace Randall.
You know, everybody shit on this movie. I loved Atomic Blonde. I loved it. I thought it was funny, cool, had a great twist ending that I didn't see coming.
I thought it was great. As soon as I got out of the theater, I bought it.
Charlize takes some real punches in this thing. I highly recommend it.
She did it in the hallway, that fight scene.
Where they actually, two people fighting, sit down and rest for a second.
Well,
You never see that in a movie. It was great because it was so brutal.
It was really brutal, you know, and great. I thought it was fabulous.
And it's kind of a turn for Charlize, too, you know. I mean, if you think about, like, playing a kick-ass action kind of...
Was one of her first roles, 2 Days in the Valley, like a million years ago.
And Mad Max.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right.
You're right. It's not quite a turn for sure.
Other than those two big examples, good point,
Neil.
I take it back.
Well, what I think is really interesting about Atomic Blonde is that it came out like right after Wonder Woman, and she's like the exact opposite of Wonder Woman. You know, she's a cool blonde. She has no personal attachments. She's very cold. You know, she works alone.
Very goyish.
Yeah, and... you know, and I think it's interesting that audiences loved Wonder Woman, but didn't quite take to this.
Yeah, this was more fun for me. I mean, I think Wonder Woman's a better movie, but this is a better ride.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Yeah. There you go.
And it's also a lot more adult. I think maybe the R rating, probably hurt it at the box office.
Too, right, Bill?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
It's a great movie.
So also on demand and on DVD this week is Wind River with Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen.
I did not like that movie.
You didn't? I thought it was great. It's a little noir and cool and feels to me like almost like a Coen Brothers film, and I recommend it. You don't?
Yeah, I really liked Hell or High Water, so I was excited about it.
Yeah.
But this was just a little too slow for me, and also it was just so unrelentingly depressing, and I understand that that's the community they were trying to depict and the problem exactly that they were having, but I think they didn't really offer like a solution. Like the way the movie ended, they were like, and that's what it's like to live here, and you were like, why doesn't anybody just try and move, and why don't you explain to me why you can't move.
All right, you'd remake it as a musical. We'll wait for that. What else?
Is it dark, just very dark?
It's very bleak.
What's that movie, Bill?
Snowscape.
We did it on the TV show where they're walking on the ice from Canada. Her and the Native American.
Frozen River.
Yeah, is it sort of like, maybe because
I'm seeing... With Melissa
Leo? I'm seeing Wind River as Frozen.
It looks like it was shot in the same place.
Okay, so Wind River, Frozen River.
Right. They shared craft services.
Another river movie.
The way you're describing it, it sounds similar, like the tonality of it sounds.
By the way, we love on the show when you haven't seen something and we just basically explain to you why you should go see it.
Yeah, well, I like that. Well, yeah. But you're not just explaining it to me. You're explaining it to our vast amount of
people. Right, River's the other really five people listening. That's a Weinstein film.
Well, speaking about something I haven't seen, I got a note from Bill McCuddy this week about, I'm going to read you his note. Brigsby Bear, written by one of the SNL guys, bet you never heard of it.
Who's the kid that did Brigsby Bear? This is a really, really out there kind of it's about a TV character named Brigsby Bear. I know who you're talking about.
It's the one who's always paired with Leslie Jones.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mikey Day?
No, the little guy.
With the long hair and the glasses.
Wafy guy. Yeah.
Everyone's always, that guy.
Like Dylan somebody.
No, it's not Dylan.
He's got like a new contemporary... We prove every week we don't use notes for this. Anyway, it's a very, very odd, strange movie that made no money that some people enjoyed. Remember the movie Frank, where the guy wore the big helmet
and
face?
I hated that movie as well.
I think it's in that genre.
Yeah, that was with
Fassbender.
That was on number 2 or number 3 on my 10 worst list that year.
Well, by all means, see this then.
And you know that movie Frank was based...
Oh boy, here we go.
It was a real band.
Smoke them if you got them.
The guy was wearing the paper mache head for the...
Well, that was one of those things where they base it on the real person, but then just totally do whatever they want.
All right, I have not seen this documentary, but Bill McCuddy saw it, and I think that we should mention... mention it because it's out on, I think it's on Netflix or on demand, and there were a lot of people that are deadheads.
We also nominated it at the Critics' Choice Documentary Awards.
Dead, and just like a Grateful Dead concert, the movie's 4 hours. It is endless. If you've ever seen the Grateful Dead, it's like, when is this going to end? And I wonder.
Barr said, the director who I had lunch with the other day said, you really learn who your friends are when you have a 4 hour movie, because
that's
you
hilarious.
Say, hey, come see my movie, and they go, how long is it?
But I think it's so fitting that the Grateful Dead documentary is as long.
Right.
How can you do a short Grateful Dead movie? Because everything they do goes on.
I'm not a Dead fan. I'm not a Garcia fan. I tell you, this movie is really, really well done. As G. Smith's wife said to me, the only thing that would have been better is if we could have dropped acid while watching
feel like
the movie.
4 hours?
Yeah. Could you really do, after 2.5 hours, you're like, please end already?
No, well, we saw it in one of those theaters that has the reclining seats, so that helped a lot.
Oh, the Barker Lounge.
You saw it in the theater.
Yeah, four hours.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, if you're not a Deadhead and you don't like their music, I'm assuming there's a lot of concert footage and there's a lot
there's
of
There's a tremendous amount of concert footage, and the other thing is, because it's streaming, I'm just going to say, and actually the director suggested this, you can, and by the way, your ride's here, Neil, you can actually webisode it. You can actually, like, watch, you know, an hour, half an hour of it, and just go from there.
Here's a question. Why is it 4 hours?
Well, it's a long story. It's a long, strange trip, as the title says.
Does it address the fact that, and how deep did they get into the fact of Jerry Garcia's beginnings, where he was actually in bluegrass bands?
It's all there. His whole story.
Really, the birth of rock. He was playing. And Jerry Garcia, to any deadheads that are listening out there and know what I'm talking about, actually did an album with a group called Olden and the Way with Vassar Clemens, where he returned once he was big and famous for the Grateful Dead, went back and did an album of bluegrass music, which is great if you love bluegrass.
Well, as I said to the director,
and did they cover that?
When you have
movie?
Four, yes. To the extent that apparently you'd like. But for example, there were 15,000 shots that were stills that they had to go through. They went through thousands of hours of film. I said, how long would the director's cut be? If the real movie is 4 hours, he said, Bill, they could have been 40 hours.
And
so
talk about like how stoned they were when they gave these cuts.
Yes, and you will feel stoned just watching it. It's like osmosis. It comes from the screen.
Because he was a vacuum cleaner for cocaine, Jerry Garcia. But that's all addressed in the movie.
Yeah, largely, yes.
Do you, either of you have any interest in seeing this movie?
I have an active dislike of The Grateful Dead.
I'm not a fan of The Grateful Dead. I like Olden and the Way. I'm not a big fan of The Grateful Dead either.
Well, then rent it and watch it backwards, and it'll have a happy ending for you.
Do you have any interest in seeing this?
No.
And do you like The Grateful Dead?
No. I'm not even familiar with that.
That would
music.
Explain the no interest.
But
though.
I would also bring up that The Punisher starts streaming on Friday as well.
What screening?
The Punisher, the new Netflix Marvel show.
Tell us about that.
And so that's been very interesting because a lot of people feel it's a little controversial for Marvel to release their big show opposite Justice League. You know, competes with people for their time.
There's just too much comic book stuff.
There's a lot.
How are the production values? Have you seen a trailer? I've seen
the first 5 episodes.
Oh, and can you recommend
it? It's a tough recommendation.
It's very slow.
Yes. It's very slow, and it doesn't feel like a comic book show, which to me is a negative because I want to watch it because I like comic books and I like the character, but they really kind of turn it into another...
What do you mean? How does it, so it takes itself too seriously, or it's trying to be...
No, very little comic book element. And it really focuses a lot on soldiers. You know, they really take it out of the comic book New York City element of the other shows from the Defenders. You know, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage. And instead, they make it all about, like, him being an ex-soldier. And there's a big controversy. And, of course, the government is up to no good. It's very Jason Bourne.
Oh,
but without the fight sequences.
That could be good, but no.
But without the fight sequences, you know.
All right, before we go, last thing. The Girlfriend Experience, which is on Starz. Is starting their second season. I got through a couple of episodes of the first season and dumped out because I didn't like it. But you guys tell me that this is a standalone season, new characters. You don't have to have known the first season.
Yeah, Riley Keough, who's Elvis's granddaughter, is not in it this year. She's also so great in Logan Lucky. But we digress, as we always do. The Steven Soderbergh, as you know, Neil.
Lucky's out, by the way, just on iTunes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Steven, Steven Soderbergh, and I highly recommend that. Steven Soderbergh produced this, directed some of the episodes. This is a reboot reboot, as Neil said. So she's not in it. Two completely new prostitutes are in it. One is in witness relocation and involved in a political plot.
That's a crazy witness relocation.
Yeah,
what's my new identity? Prostitute.
No, she was a prostitute. Now she comes to this.
Oh, I see.
So it's only, I've only seen two episodes, which Bill and I have both seen. Sets it up well. I think it's worth a look, and so I recommend it.
Yeah, they're just setting up what I saw so far. The photography, particularly for the one with the two women, I think it's called Erica and Anna.
Yes.
That one, I like the photography quite a bit because it's all austere. It was actually shot in Toronto, but it takes place in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Really cool looking restaurant.
It all has that Soderbergh kind of cold gloss to it that last season did. I know you didn't like it, but I think the look is cool and clinical.
But it's better than last season.
Well, I liked last season, so you're asking the wrong guy. It's completely different, so if you didn't like last season, you should give this one a try.
So next week, Thanksgiving, we'll tell you what to watch on Thanksgiving. We've got some big movies opening up. We're going to talk about Coco, the new Pixar Disney film.
Yeah, that looks great.
We're going to talk about Darkest Hour, which I've seen, and Bill Bergoli has seen.
And I've seen.
And
it's
Grace
fantastic.
Has seen.
And I will see in the Hamptons next week.
And it's Oscar contender, my friends. We'll tell you more about that.
Well, tell them who he plays. Gary Oldman plays
Winston Churchill.
Thank you.
And it's actually a companion piece to Dunkirk. We'll talk about that. And
which
also,
is going to win Best Picture of the Year, by the way.
Well, Dunkirk?
Save it for next week.
No way.
And Call Me By Your Name, which is produced by Howard Rosenman, who did The Family Guy.
And stars Armie Hammer, who I'm seeing Thursday night at a post party for it this week in Manhattan. I'll have some Armie Hammer quotes.
Armie Hammer. And that's another one that they're talking a lot about, Academy Awards. So have you seen that yet, Bill Bergoli?
No, I haven't, but I have a screener.
Okay.
We all do.
All right, so we will talk about that. And again, we'll give you recommendations on what you should be binge-watching or checking out over the
after your binge-eating.
You know, the Thanksgiving holiday. So for our guest, Grace Randolph.
Thank you for having me.
Thank
Grace,
you for
give your give your website a plug.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Come visit me on YouTube under Beyond the Trailer, and you can find me on Twitter at Grace Randolph.
There you go. And you could find me at Neil Rose and Apples on Twitter, and you could find Bill Bergoli at
the right
at my apartment.
The corner of
he's right,
fixing his back. Right. And you can find Bill McCuddy.
At Bill McCuddy on Twitter. Please join the 7,000. Grow. Let's make it 8,000 by next week.
There you go. So, as always, I want to say thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.